Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup Podcast. My name is Joe Glover and I am very, very thankful for you for taking the time to listen to the Marketing Meetup Podcast. This talk is by a lovely, wonderful human being called Amanda. And I'm going to stop there for a second because I'm going to butcher her last name. But I think it's Amanda McRuerta. A-M-A-N-D-A-M-C-W-R-I-T-E-R. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it, but nonetheless, that shouldn't take away from what is a brilliant talk all about captivating content and making it completely contagious. So I guess you could use the alliteration, contagious, captivating content. Now, we all do content as marketers, but I think it's one of those things that it takes so much time and sometimes you see so little in return that it feels like a constant slog. What this talk is designed to do is to help you take your content and take it to the next level and actually distribute it in such a way that people do see it and it does go viral. I mean, viral is a bit of one of those cliche things and it's so hard to do, but what Amanda does so well is that she gives her formula for trying to make stuff go viral. And if you hit those points, there's no guarantees, but you're far more likely to hit the eyeballs that you desperately crave. So I really hope you enjoy this talk. I thought Amanda was just a brilliant person and I really enjoyed her content too. It was captivating and contagious potentially, hopefully. If you'd like anything more from the Marketing Meetup, head to themarketingmeetup.com. Head to one of our events. We're in Cambridge, Norwich, Bedford, Birmingham and London, or listen to more of the podcast episodes. There's loads now and there's lots of really good marketing stuff there for you. I really hope you enjoy and I'll see you soon.
We said don't shout out, but it is a full moon tonight and I'm a little bit superstitious and some of you might not be able to control yourselves, it's that kind of thing. So ALM Content, my company, it's not a pitch, but what I basically do is I manage, I create content and I try and make it go viral for people. So who even is this woman? I ask myself that every day when I look in the mirror, seeking therapy. But what do? I mean, I'm a journalist, I'm a writer, I've got 15 years marketing experience. It's always been my, like, a bit of an obsession really to kind of merge the two together and think, how can I actually produce something great and actually make people share it, love it, merge it. I was an original content pioneer, been trained by some really cool mentors, Christina Salverson, and the person I'm going to be basing a lot on tonight, Jonah Berger, who's really looked into the psychology of content and how it works, how people share, and which sort of makes some things get absolutely loved and other things just fall on their ass, basically. So definition, sometimes it's better to go back to the dictionary, keeping it simple. So what does contagious mean? It's something that kind of spreads. It spreads from one person to another, not necessarily in a negative way. It doesn't have to be like a disease. And content, you'll get lots of people that will talk about being a content guru. But actually, they're a copywriter, and there's nothing wrong with pure copywriters, but content is everything that you do. It's a speech you give. It's a video you make. It's a report you put out. And I think people need to realise that content is a much wider sense than what they actually think it is for a business. So why do some things catch on? Well, it's simple in some ways. It's your quality, your price and your advertising. That's all you need, basically. But it's a bit more now. You need social influences. People love to talk. There's, like, I think we say 16,000 words every day. And every hour, I think there's 100 million conversations about brands. On social, it's been proven that a 5-star review on Amazon sells 20 more books, I think, an hour compared to like a 1-star review. It's like some crazy stats. And word of mouth is more authentic. You know, you trust what someone says by a friend says compared to like someone that's, I don't know, an advertiser, a marketer. So, you know, leverage that. And it's more targeted word of mouth. I mean, you hear something really good. If there's a sale on about, Pilch Sports are selling ski wear at half price. You're going to tell your friend that you're going to ski and you're not going to just like tell everybody. So it's a really, really good thing. And old school as well, spreading, not sticking. You can either, when you something sticks, you can sell to one person. When something spreads, you're selling to the many. So if you get something shared, then more people are going to buy it rather than just that one person. So that's what to think of. Why the cheesesteak? Well, you're all thinking, looks nice. There's a company in Philadelphia, they had no budget. In Philadelphia, the cheesesteak is as common as a hot dog in New York. There's one guy, he had nothing, and he's like, God, what am I going to do? How am I going to make this work? So he put a $100 cheesesteak on the menu. A cheesesteak costs about $5, I think. I'm not an expert in cheesesteaks, so I've just read this. With a $100 cheesesteak, it had like gold flakes on it, had mushroom, and suddenly like, people were like coming just to be in the restaurant. They just wanted to have a picture taken by the menu where a $100 cheesesteak was served. People were sharing it, like Bible picked up. Oh my God, there's this restaurant with a $100 cheesesteak, it's amazing. It was all this stuff, and he had nothing, but he's actually, his restaurant has never ever had an empty table from that point on, and it's just a regular restaurant. Doesn't do anything special. Same cheesecake as a lot of other places. Just shows. So there are five steps to contagion, to how to make something contagious. Firstly, you've got social currency. At the minute, you want to kind of look cool to people. Well, you always want to look cool to people. So we share what makes us look good when we kind of feel that we've got knowledge, we've got something better to say. Triggers. What's top of mind is tip of tongue. So how do you make people think about your business or your brand without seeing the actual physical product or service in front of them? An emotion, this is my favourite one. When we care, we share. And I'll let you know, it's not necessarily like, oh my God, it can be excitement, it can be like passion, it can be like a real depth of like anger that makes you share. And public, you know, built to show, built to grow. So stuff that's out there in the public domain that everybody can see, when you can see someone using something, that's when it gets shared. And practical value, you know, you might think, oh, what have I got that makes me different? You know, if you've got something, I mean, I've worked for an insurance company for 10, 15 years, I managed to make them successful on social just because you kind of think of a practical value and you kind of think of these things to actually make it a little bit exciting, a little bit kind of usable for people, then you can make it work. And stories, which is going to link in really well with Martin, is information travels under the guise of idle chatter, and you can make your product really integral to a narrative and actually make people pick it up and want to talk about it. It's a really positive thing. So we'll first talk about social currency. And minting, it's giving people a way to make themselves look good while they're promoting you, kind of making them feel really, really special. That's what minting is. What makes something really interesting and surprising comes with inner remarkability. I'm going to show you in a video in a minute about a guy that had this blender company. There's 1,000 blenders on the market. They all do the same thing. They all crush ice. He, again, had no budget. And then he thought, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do this really kind of weird YouTube video, and I'm going to see if it can like crush marbles in a blender. And he did it, and it got shared like 2 million times. And he thought, do you know what, I'm going to shove my iPhone in the blender and just see what happens again. He did that, and again, and suddenly this like Blendex technology was like crazy. Everybody wanted to know, what else can this blender blend? And it went viral. It's quite, yeah, it's mental. You could do anything. Game mechanics, I mean, that's been around for a long time. I know a guy that he wanted to go in the business class lounge at Heathrow, and to actually get enough points to go in that business class lounge, he did a flight, a round trip flight, all the way to like Malaga, back to Heathrow again, just to get enough points to go in the lounge. Flight cost him £300. Probably pay to go in that lounge would cost him about £50. It's that game mechanics, like, you are not going to defeat me, my points are not going to expire, and I'm going to get in. And the same with things like, I'm the same. I've got an Alison Lee account when I used to work for an insurer, and it's like, right, I'm not going to lose my gold account, even though I never, ever, like, use a taxi off-peak. I want to keep that kind of gold status and things like that. So, yeah, people talk about gamification, like it's a new thing, but it's not. It's been around for ages, you know, and it's something you can apply to most things. Even an insurer I worked with to sell car insurance, we looked at how we could actually look at how people drive. So we did a really simple game, pushed it out to Facebook and to Twitter, and we started kind of pitching Ipswich Town supporters against Norwich City supporters, and we started doing, males against females, and suddenly it was like kind of seeing how well you can drive, using the pay-as-you-drive kind of application that we had, and people loved it and they shared it. So it doesn't have to be like this really kind of sexy product to make this work. You can do with a lot of things. Making people insiders and letting them feel that they have a little secret. You've probably heard of a lot of these bars in London. You have to go, you knock on a door, you say a password, you go to the fridge and you go in. It's just a normal bar, but kind of you feel that you know it. And when you leave, they even give you a little card saying, please don't tell. And it's like, oh my God, I'm really in something really, really, really exciting. And it's the same with like insider lists. When you get sent an insider list, which kind of says like, right, just today only, because you're on a VIP list, you get 20% off, which feels special. And it's nice, you know, it works. So I can show you a video of the blender blending marbles. We've been having a few technology issues, haven't we, tonight? So I might just flick through it.
Okay, you sure?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, you'll get slides after. You'll see the blender.
Marbles go in a blender, they blend. So move on to triggers. oh, you know, you see a Corona next to a beach, means that when you're on a beach, oh, I was going to think about a Corona. That's how it works. I think more about a margarita, but that's just me. So think about immediate word of mouth versus ongoing. Both have got their place. You get kind of a flyer through your door about a new recycling service. You're probably going to talk about it that day. But then what about ongoing word of mouth? That, again, is, you know, a really important thing. You can kind of trigger to talk. You can actually build on existing triggers or create your own. Think about What's Up of the 90s. I don't know, a lot of you are very young. I don't know you're one of those. But that was something. They, you know, Budweiser looked into the fact that 20-year-old males say What's Up or What's Up. Oh, what's going on there? I can't even say it myself. So they took it and they related it. And it was kind of like, well, you know, they're saying it anyway. So now when people start saying it, they're going to start thinking about Budweiser because it's all over. Same with Kit Kat and Diet Coke. They've got to a stage, and I've said it myself like an absolute loser, when it's like, oh, Diet Coke, break time. Not even going to have a Diet Coke, but you associate kind of Kit Kat, have a break, have a Kit Kat, Diet Coke. You kind of associate, and that suddenly it's a trigger. And even if you're not having a Kit Kat, you're talking about a Kit Kat. It's great. Timing and context is really important. I mean, I'm a real person, where I think I'm quite eco, but I always get to a supermarket, and it's only when I see the Tesco sign, I think, oh, shit, I've got all those bags, carry bags at home, haven't brought them with me. So it's thinking about how you can actually time your trigger to actually make sure people think about it before they actually get into the buying cycle. Think about it in context too. So for example, at the moment, if you want to kind of do something around the word orange, orange is always going to come up against Halloween. So if you kind of you wouldn't promote chocolate orange right now, we'll start talking about chocolate orange because it's going to be associated with Halloween, things like that. And grow the habitat. So like I said, with the Tesco's example, don't just think about when people are really in this tight perimeter. How can you actually make that kind of habitat where those triggers actually grow wider and wider so people start thinking about it sooner, start thinking about it in a different stage of the cycle to kind of build that up? This is an awful thing that I'm not going to play. So you might have heard of Rebecca Black. She's this awful teenage girl. Oh, that's unfair. She's not this awful. She's an entrepreneurial teenage girl who's really good at YouTube. But she she released a song. You might have heard it, and it's just so awful. But it was called Friday. Her name's Rebecca Black. And purely by accident, she released it mid-November before Black Friday. So what happened with that trigger is people were searching for Friday, the people were thinking about Friday. It was the most downloaded video, I think, of the year on YouTube. And every Friday from about 7 or 8 months afterwards, it would come up and people would think about, oh my God, that awful song, it's Friday. I'm going to think about it, but it's Friday and I love Friday, so I'm going to play that song. So she, you know, she mistakenly, it's probably a bad example because she didn't even plan the trigger kind of just happened, but it's just how triggers can work, whether you want them to or not. Emotion, this is my favourite one because I'm just a emotional wreck a lot of the time. So the power of awe is like a really good emotion, something that kindles people more than anything, and you start to think about it. You've got to focus on feelings. I mean, that's a really harrowing image of, you know, with Syria, the photo that was in there, I think it was the Telegraph, I can't remember, maybe the Mail, but of the dead child being carried out to sea. That was something that really promoted emotion. I think after that picture came out, the donations, the awareness and everything was just like, just went through the roof. But it hasn't got to be a negative emotion all the time. You know, there are some emotions that really provoke people to act, and there are some that make people do nothing at all. So if you think about happiness, excitement, anger, they really make people want to do stuff. Think of that dentist, that awful dentist that shot Cecil the Lion. Some of them are really negative examples, but when that came out, it really prompted people to think about hunting and actually want to do something about it. But then same with like the kitten that kind of does a forward roll, you know, that's a happy emotion, it makes you want to share it. The things that don't really do anything, weirdly, are sadness and discontentment. So when people think, oh, that's nice, they don't want to do anything. When people are really sad, they don't want to do anything. So it's kind of thinking of the certain emotions that you can share to actually make happen. Again, this is Susan Boyle. My examples are just awful and I love it. I'm not going to play it, but the power of awe, this woman, and you know, we shouldn't judge, but this, you know, frumpy woman came on stage, everyone's thinking, oh my God, it's going to be awful for X Factor. Came on stage and she had this voice of an angel. And it was like the power of awe, and that people shared it beyond, you know, the wildest dreams. It was absolutely amazing. And these are things that catch on. All these little tears at the bottom, I love it. So public for contagion, this is a good one. The first example there is Livestrong. So I don't know who knows about the Livestrong campaign. Lance Armstrong did a cycling ride, it was across America, and the cycling ride lasted a couple of weeks. But Nike, they worked with Nike to produce this wristband. It was yellow, so male and female liked it, apparently. But the cycle ride lasted a couple of weeks, and yeah, it raised awareness for the cause of sickly cancer. But the wristband, people are wearing it years later. That's behavioural residue. People had this, they had the branding on their arm. It was something that people talked about. People were proud to have it. They would share it on social media. Other people wanted to be part of this kind of lovely piece of content. And the power of imitation as well. This is a good one. We like to be like other people. Whether much as we kind of stand here and think we want to stand out, you probably bought, some of the people in the room might have bought what they're wearing because they saw it on somebody else. They might have seen, I don't know, it's the thing that's in fashion, it was in Vogue, it was in the window of Top Man. I don't know, I'm not judging. But the power of imitation is a really strong thing, and this is how influencers work. I mean, I work as a blogger and I work as an influencer as well, but as a side, but people will send me things because I might I attract to my blog like 35 to kind of 50 year old women. I wonder why. And they send me things like shoes or a bag to carry because they think, you know, if I carry it, take a nice picture with it, people are going to buy it as well. So even though they're kind of, I'm like this with influencers, but if people do see people, not just people that are in the public eye doing it, but friends and family, they're more going to see a bit more stake in it. And another one, making the private public. This is an interesting one, but think of Movember. Nobody ever talked about testicular cancer. It was like an absolute thing where you, you know, you don't talk about it. It happens, but you kind of support it. But then the Movember thing happened. People were going out there, sharing content of them with the moustaches, with the beards, showing what they were doing. And suddenly it was like, you know, this is driving awareness. People were sharing it. People were getting really on board with it. And they were really making kind of things that are private public. So it kind of shows that you don't have to have a sexy brand. It doesn't have to be a kind of something that is just really, really kind of amazing, top of the moment thing. It can be something that is a bit sensitive or maybe considered a bit boring. It could be insurance, it could be banking, it could be anything like that. But you can do this. You can use all of this to make it work. Imitation, here's the thing. So when you go on holiday, you walk up the road in Tenerife, and there's a couple of restaurants, that doesn't look like a Tenerife restaurant as well, bad example. But you've got the guy there, you know, nobody in the room, and you've got all these strangers in a restaurant, and you think, where am I going to eat? Well, I'm going to go to the one where the people are in. I'm not going to go to that guy. Even if you might have like a Michelin star outside, you're just not going to do it. You're always going to follow what people do. Well, maybe. And practical value, lastly but not least. Practical value is all about hacks. Martin Lewis has built his built his career on this. You know, ways that you can save money, make money, lose weight, all stuff that you can actually use, save time. Pinterest thrives on this. So lists to make kind of, yeah, I don't have a pension, what should I do? Lists that people will use and share. My favourite video, I think, that kind of, I don't think says a lot about me, was how to open a bottle of wine with a shoe when you haven't got a corkscrew present. I remember it got shared loads, and I always get tagged in things like that, which again says a lot. But yeah, those sort of things, practical advice. You know you're going to be in that situation at some point, so it's always good. But the psychology of deals as well. Psychology of deals is things like, you know, if you see a set of knives, they might reduce from £200 to £100. But then if you buy them today, you get a free knife sharpener. Guarantee people are going to buy them today just because it's like they see a deal. So it's kind of that kind of content in the retail space. And also highlighting and limiting value. Groupon have built obviously a really big business on this. Travel companies do it really well. You know, when you're looking at a hotel and like 10 people are looking at this, and Groupon as well, there's a limited amount of what you can buy and what you can have. You know, it just works really, really well. And actionable advice, things like how to, I don't think we do anything in our house without checking YouTube first within reason, how to change a tyre, how to hang a curtain, you know, things like that. That's kind of what we do now. So the advice that people can use and people can share is just really, really good. So Joe Wicks, he's another one that's built a career on this. How to have great abs in 9 minutes, how to lose weight and be healthy in 15 minutes. It's all this kind of actionable advice that gets so shared, and you know, you probably get tagged on it a million times. So yeah, all a great example. So lastly, we've got storytelling. Everyone knows the kind of the legend of the Trojan horse. You know, Trojan horse went in, people hidden inside it, got behind enemy lines. Stories are like that. Stories are like vessels, and that's what you need to think. Stories have lived before us, they'll live after us. They're a brilliant way to do it. I mean, a favourite example of mine, there was a guy that lost 400 pounds. I think this again was picked up on Lab Bible. You know, how it changed his life, how he got really sexy and he met a girlfriend and it was all great. And he did it from eating Subway. And that kind of ticks so many boxes, because you've got the kind of the practical value, this is how you can use it. You've got the like, oh, because it's like, oh my God, you know, this guy's done this, he's changed his life. You know, it ticks all these boxes and people love it, they share it, it's got that kind of personal element. You can learn lots through stories, that's what people like to do, and create your own Trojan horse. Everything, if you can embed your narrative and your brand within a story, then it's just perfect. I mean, even you look back at nursery rhymes, right? You've got the three little pigs, two idiots and one really cool pig that actually thought about it, took the time, thought about bricks, you know, and it showed the moral to the story was, you put in a bit of effort, you're not going to get eaten by a wolf. That's what you need to do, you know. Haven't there were so many brands that have done this wrong. You've got the dancing babies with Evian. Everyone remembers the dancing baby, they don't remember Evian. So it's just kind of actually having your people have a story where people can't actually tell that story without mentioning you within it as a brand or a business. Look at David Attenborough, my like soul granddad. He's like, we're all aware about what's happening with the oceans. He came out, you know, part of Blue Planet. Talked about it, coming from him, so authentic, such a story. He'd seen it kind of go on. Suddenly, the kind of support towards oceans and everything just went through the roof because it was relatable. It was a story you associated him, associated with kind of with Sky, which was great. So an example of this was Dove. Dove took on the beauty industry, and bearing in mind that the beauty industry of what kind of makes Dove a part of it. Rather than to promote their brand, they talked about how real women aren't used, how, you know, it's always skinny supermodels. They didn't mention what a Dove product does at all, but it just got to the fact that they were using real women in their campaigns. Suddenly, nobody would talk about real women without thinking about Dove. So the summary, and this kind of talks me out of business here, but it doesn't take big budgets at all. You know, it doesn't take marketing gurus. And by the way, anyone that says they're a guru means they're an idiot. There's no such thing. It doesn't need celebrity influencers. And you don't need a massive creativity gene. You just got to think about, you know, apply some of these steps to what you do in your business. And it does work. I mean, you go back to the cheese steak, you go back to the blender. These are people, a couple of guys that had no budget. What would probably be seen as like a quite boring product, but they made it work. They just thought outside the box. I can't believe when you said that. Stab through the heart. It's awful to greet marketing people. Cringe. But yeah, that's all you need to do. And that's it.